Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to the Strang Report today. You know, I've been on a book tour, and my recent podcasts have been about my book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election, and even ran some of the media interviews that I've done. But today, I wanted to share an interview that I did while I was on the road and someone that I met, a very interesting man. His name is John Allered. He's a pastor in Springfield, Missouri. He has a very, very interesting past. He's a relatively young man in his 40s. He's had a very tough life. He was in drug addiction. He was in prison a couple of times. But he was gloriously saved. And he has started a church in Springfield, Missouri that a friend of mine told me about. And I had to just check it out. And I went by and actually visited him at Freedom City Church in Springfield. And I was warned that it was in the ghetto. And my friend drove me over there, and we drove up, and I looked around, and I said, this isn't the ghetto. It was kind of an older neighborhood. I said, this is the neighborhood where I grew up. And a lot of you may not know that I was born in Springfield, Missouri. My father pastored an Assembly of God that is exactly 1.2 miles from his church. I looked it up on the GPS. I mean, literally, it's walkable. And the houses on my street looked an awful lot like the houses. Of course, they're fairly old now, and it is not the best part of town. But he welcomes people who have come out of that lifestyle. And I met a couple people that were just there at the church, a couple of them on staff who've, I mean, they look like wonderful, law-abiding, normal citizens. But boy, when they tell you their background, it's just almost unbelievable. So with my cell phone, which was the only way I could record a podcast, of course, I recorded two podcasts, and I'm going to play the one today that is about his testimony, and I hope that it will inspire you, because all of us have a story. All of our stories are not exactly what John's is, but you know, if John can overcome what he's overcome in his life, each of us can overcome the problems that we've had in the past, or the way that Satan would tempt us or try to pull us away from serving God. And also, I hope that it's a model for maybe pastors or leaders of churches of how you can do ministry to those who are in need, because we've got a tremendous drug epidemic in our country, and our jails are full. I've heard the statistics, and I may not be saying them right. In fact, I think that John may have even said it in my interview that America is 5% of the world's population and 25% of the prison population of the world is in the United States. And I believe that only Jesus is the answer. So here is my interview with John Allered, my new friend from Springfield, Missouri.
Pastor, you have a pretty amazing story. I went by your church, Freedom City Church in Springfield, Missouri, when I was traveling, and couldn't believe the sign. It said, welcome felons, junkies, and saints. Yeah. Why did you put that on the sign for your church?
Yeah, well, you know, we wanted people to know that they're welcome here. You know, I come from that background, and my wife does too. But most people from that background feel uncomfortable at a normie church, what we call normies. You know, they feel uncomfortable. So we wanted to make sure that they knew they were welcome here. And what's interesting is that I got a lot of opposition from that, from local pastors who ended up calling me and said, you need to take down that sign because you're condoning crime and addiction. And I said, you have no idea what we're doing. So instead of taking it down, we made a t-shirt out of it and started selling that online. We had people calling from across the country wanting the Welcome Felons, Junkies, and Saints t-shirts, and we used that money to support our recovery homes.
Well, didn't people criticize Jesus for hanging out with, what were they, tax collectors, I guess, which is the scum of the day, and all kinds of bad people, yet he hung out to minister to them, and that's what you do here.
Right, that's exactly right. And you know what's interesting is people would never see themselves. Christians today would never see them in the place of the Pharisees You know, but these gentlemen that called and some that I've come into contact with, that's exactly what they are. They're modern day Pharisees. If Jesus was here, he'd be ministering in the prisons and the trap houses and the hoods. You know, that Jesus went to the broken. You know, he went to the down and out. He went to the up and out. But I think sometimes the down and out recognize their need, and the up and outers sometimes don't.
And what is your own story? Why do you relate to these people so well?
Yeah, so even though I grew up in church, my parents were missionaries to Latin America. My dad got saved at the First Presbyterian Church in Monterey and then went to a Bible school in Elam, New York. My mom came from San Diego. They met in Bible school, and we were on the mission field for many years in Latin America. My parents went through a divorce. So I grew up around the things of God, but my parents went through a very bitter divorce. After that, there was little supervision. I had uncles of mine that were involved in criminal activity and would end up in prison. But when they were out, they had the big cars, the big houses, and I kind of wanted to be like that. And so I went after that lifestyle of selling drugs. I graduated high school, and then at the University of New Mexico in my first year, I got busted for my first cocaine trafficking charge. And so initially I started to just make money selling drugs, and we were making lots and lots of money. Eventually I found myself hopelessly addicted to crack cocaine and heroin, and that went on for almost a decade. In 1998, in a drug deal gone bad in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I stabbed a guy outside of a 7-Eleven, and he was attacking me, and I stabbed him. But I was already on the run from the PO, so I had to get out of that city. So my intention was to go to Mexico. I speak fluent Spanish. My intention was to go to Mexico and continue my life the way I wanted to live it. And I went to Phoenix and was going to go south into the south across the border and just live in Mexico. But I stopped at a little Christ-centered recovery home connected with a church in Phoenix, Arizona. And I went into the program just to get clean, not to find Jesus, not to have a spiritual awakening. I wanted to get clean so I could stay on the run. So it was very practical in my mind what I was going to do. But I went into that little recovery home, and I had a radical encounter with Jesus. So the same Jesus that my parents talked about, the same Jesus that I heard about in church but wasn't real to me as a kid, made himself real to me. And overnight, my worldview changed. I didn't want to use drugs. I stopped cursing. I didn't want to hurt people. Overnight, it was one of those radical overnight transformations. And I was in my word continually. I graduated the program, and then I ran the program. Then I told my pastor, I said, I feel like I'm called to full-time ministry to be a pastor. And he said, well, you should go to the school ministry in downtown Los Angeles. So I went to the school ministry for that, the fellowship that I was a part of at that time called Victory Outreach, out of LA. And so I went over there, graduated the school of ministry. We did a lot of street evangelism and classes, and so I graduated the School of Ministry in downtown Los Angeles, and they asked me to go to the Philippines as a missionary and to plant churches and be on a team starting recovery homes over there. And so I told the pastor there, I said, I might have an open account of attempted murder from before I had an encounter with Jesus. I'm not sure, but they might not let me fly out. You know, and so one of the pastors there told me, and this is inner city ministry, and he goes, hey, you know what? When I found Jesus, I had a stack of charges up to my waist, but you know what? He made them all go away, eh? And so I was like, okay, you know, maybe that will happen with me. I claim that for me. That doesn't always work, does it? And then so I ended up going to, I said, let me pray about it. And I ended up going to what was going on in Brownsville, Florida, called the Brownsville Revival.
Oh, I was there. I remember it well.
Come on. And so, you know, I saw this guy, Steve Hill, who was an ex-junkie, ex-homeless guy.
And a good friend of mine.
Oh, he's wonderful. And so I felt something there I hadn't felt before, you know, that really a tangible presence of God there. And but anyway, I was there for about a week. And I thought, you know what, if God can do that in his life, maybe he could do it in my life, you know. And then there I feel like something was imparted almost to me there, where I wanted to see people rush the altars I don't know if there's anything more beautiful than the way people would rush the altars at Brownsville. And so I went back, and so I was there, and I'm thinking, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay in L.A.? Should I turn myself in, or should I go? And so I'm saying, should I stay or should I go? And a guy walked up to me with a tape recorder, pressed record and play, and he put it up to me, and he gave a prophecy, and he said, God says go. You're not out of place, you're in place. And this guy began to read my mail. He told me things from the past of my life that nobody knew, and things in the future that actually ended up happening. And so I went back to L.A. and I said, then he took the tape out and gave it to me, right? And so I took that tape, drove back with my dad, and we went back to L.A. And in L.A. I told him, well, I said, God says go. Let's go. So I hopped on a plane a couple weeks later with a team, went to Manila, the Philippines, and we saw God move powerfully over there. The church exploded, the recovery homes. We had hundreds of people at the recovery homes, and the mayor of Manila at the time, Lito Atienza, he gave us properties to do the recovery homes. Over there, they don't care about separation of church and state stuff. Whatever's working. It's working. You do it. We don't want to do it. You know what I mean? Work with these addicts. And God moved. And so 2.5 years later, after I planted a church in Tondo with some of the people from this training center, and we started recovery homes, we came back. Our team came back. And lamentably, Stephen, that God forgives. But the district attorney, not so much, right? And so I got to LAX, and I was going to share the testimony of what God was doing in the Philippines. At the Victory Outreach World Conference, this is 2003.
So you'd already been over there. Mm-hmm. You'd come back. So you got through with the passport or whatever.
On the way over, I got
through. But this time it didn't work.
They arrested me. So I didn't even make it out of the airport. At customs, they came up and said, we want to take you to the short line. And they took me over, and it was a short line. It was just me. And put your hands behind your back. You're under arrest for a fugitive warrant out of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I'm back in the L.A. County Jail. Everybody's having a party at the World Conference in Long Beach Stadium. I'm in the L.A. County Jail. Got extradited back to Albuquerque to face those charges, and I'm facing 25 years in prison. And ended up getting released after about a year and got discouraged, stopped staying plugged into God, praying, fasting, reading my word every day. Got away from that, and I didn't have the community of faith around me. And I had my old friends and my primos, my cousins, that were still doing the same thing. And so with that discouragement, I ended up relapsing and backsliding and went back to my old life like a dog returning to its vomit, And I was one of those people that if you would have asked them, they were like, this guy will never fail, never fall, ever, And I didn't think I ever would. And I think somewhere in there became some kind of pride. I was real harsh with people that would mess up, be clean for a while and mess up. But then I ended up going back, and I would stay at a little cheap hotel on the run, on the lam, staying at a little cheap hotel on Central Avenue in Albuquerque called the De Anza. And I was shooting up cocaine and heroin 24/7. And during that time, I would sell drugs in the alley and shoot up drugs nonstop. And so during that time, the demonic realm was opened up to me. I would see little demons running around me with voices of little children. At night, I would have sleep paralysis and demons in my face, and I would leave my body and have demons attack me in the air. Stuff would move in the room. And we know that the devil comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I thought I had gone completely crazy. And so during that time, the enemy began to attack me, and he began to say, you'd be better off dead. You should kill yourself. You have a daughter you don't even know. You said you were a Christian, but you're nothing but a hypocrite. You hurt everybody who loves you. You're going to prison the rest of your life. Why don't you pull that trigger? And I would sit there with a .45 Ruger to my head in that little hotel room. And in my drug-induced and demonically oppressed mind, the best decision I could come up with was to pull that trigger. But by the grace of God, I didn't pull that trigger.
And what made the difference?
I don't know.
God had a plan for you.
God had a plan, absolutely. So I was picked up about a year later and sent to prison. I got a good attorney and only got 8 years in prison. When I got to prison, I'm doing the same thing, bringing in drugs, getting high, doing the whole prison thing. And after about a year, I got busted for suspicion of bringing narcotics into the facility, and I was put in solitary confinement for 5 months at the prison in Santa Fe, New Mexico, PNM, level 5. And right there, I went into that little prison cell. And at this time, Stephen, at this time in my life, I didn't know if God really existed anymore, you know. And so the Bible says sin separates us from God. I was a pastor. People would rush the altar calls like they did Steve Hill in the Philippines. God was moving powerfully. We saw, you know, people delivered of demons, of addiction, and just powerful things. And now here I am several years later, strung out in prison, not knowing if God was real. So sin separates us from God, you know, to the point where you can get to the point where you don't know if he still exists.
So how'd you get back?
So right there in that solitary confinement, I got down on my knees and I said, Jesus, if you're still there, would you come back into my life? And it was like waves of electric liquid love that flowed over me for 5 months. My prison became a palace. My dungeon was filled with light. God began to draw me back to him. And during that time, a few days later, God was showing me pictures of me speaking in stadiums, of me speaking in prisons, in churches. And I said, God, you got the wrong guy. I said, in my background, we value loyalty. I couldn't be loyal to God. And so I had a real hard time with thinking he could use me. I just wanted him back in my life. But God spoke to me clearly. From a verse that I had read that morning about 3 days later. It was from the parable of the 11th hour workers, Matthew chapter 20, verse 15, I believe. And he said, don't I have the right to do what I want with my own things? And so the way he said it was gentle. It broke me into a million pieces right there on that prison floor. And I said, yes, Lord. And I got out of solitary confinement, did several more years. I got out after about 4 years, actually, for good behavior. But I was voted in as inmate pastor. God began to move, you know, when I got back to general population, back to the line, they call it. And God began to move. The inmate church was packed out. People were getting saved, giving their lives to Jesus. It was so full, they couldn't get everybody into the chapel that wanted to come. So it's unheard of. So the prison system began to think, because they knew my background, they thought I was starting a new gang. They thought it was a security threat. So they would move me to a different prison, and then God would begin to move at that prison, you know. And by the time I ended up getting out, the main warden over all of New Mexico came and walked me out, and he said, he goes, since that time, last time you were in solitary confinement, he goes, you've been an asset to the community here. You've been a model inmate. And he shook my hand as I was going out, walked me out, shook my family's hand and told them what a phenomenal job I had done in prison. You know, I mean, if you're going to be an inmate, you might as well be a model one, right? And so I I ended up going to the community college. I cut off ties with the old friends of mine and, you know, got serious about education. In prison, I had done Global University undergraduate courses. That was the only university that would jump through the hoops to get them to me there in the DOC of New Mexico. And so I ended up applying after my parole. I applied to Central Bible College here in Springfield, Missouri, and came up here about 9-10 years ago. Met my beautiful wife. She was a graduate of the Long Island Teen Challenge, and she was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York City. And we got married, and I graduated summa cum laude. And I thought, I didn't actually know if I could do academics. As a young man, I was a smart kid in high school, but I didn't know if I could do it because my mind was mush. So that speaks to, you know, God really restoring my mind. And also, I just worked real hard. So my reading comprehension wasn't real good from all those years of addiction, but I would just work harder and read. And so I graduated top of my class. I got a job at Global University as a bilingual faculty, the same school that used to send me my prison courses.
That's right here in Springfield,
right? That's right here in Springfield.
So is that why you started the church here? As we kind of wrap this up.
Yeah.
Just briefly, this church is incredible. It's grown so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And I even met one of your people who you introduced me to who was in prison and miraculously saved. You know, you were already here in Springfield, but just tell me briefly how you started the church and what's happening.
Yeah, so we thought we would plant urban churches. So it's interesting, the day that Steve Hill died, me and my wife lived across from Central Bible College in a duplex. And that night, we went to bed and I asked my wife, I said, who's going to weep over the lost like Steve Hill did? And I fell down to the ground and just began to weep over the lost and, you know, in my community and here. And God began to just deal with my heart that I was like, God, you got to do something about Springfield, meth addiction. And then that at that time, heroin was becoming prominent here. And I was going into all the prisons to speak and telling God he needed to do something. He goes, you need to do something. And so I wrote a prospectus at AGTS, a 50-page prospectus on a hypothetical church plant in North Springfield. And I believe it was what we really wanted to do was actual vision. But in that prospectus, I talked about a church, you know, that welcomed everybody, you know, and welcomed people from my background, that we would have recovery homes and discipleship homes and an urban training center, a college like we have now. And so it's been a journey. We started I quit Global University to start the church planning process. We started, fasting and praying once a week, meeting at our house. That moved to our backyard because we outgrew the house. Then went to a little Methodist church for our Friday night fire outreach, meal and a message. And then we launched Sunday services on March 6, 2016 at the Assemblies of God Theological Seminary. You know, they don't use the church on Sundays. And so we use that for our Sunday service and the Pathways Methodist Church for Fridays, and people have gotten saved, more than 10 people every service since that first service, over 100 people in attendance every Sunday since then, and it's just been phenomenal to see what God has done. In January 2017, we bought this building and 1477 North Broadway. Now we have 5 recovery homes. Our Hope Homes are affiliated with Adult Teen Challenge. And then we have 5 sober living homes for people getting out of prison and getting off drugs. And it's phenomenal. So we have 3 campuses, a Branson campus, a campus at Ozark Correctional Center, and our main campus in Springfield. And we're seeing over 600 people at weekend services, with people getting saved every service. And we're just excited to see what God is going to do in the future. And he's been very gracious these past few years since we launched. And but we're believing that the best is yet to come.
You know, John has written a couple of books. He gave me copies of them. They look very interesting. One of them is called My Prison Became a Palace, and it's kind of his testimony. It's actually got an endorsement by Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference and a good friend of mine. He says, not only critical in its timeliness, but also universal in its application. And of course, he is talking about John's book. You can find out more information by going to John's website, which is www.freedomcitychurch.org. The nice thing about a podcast is you could back it up and listen to it again. But Freedom City Church is written as if it's one word, .org, in Springfield, Missouri, or you can go on their website and find out a lot of information. So I want to thank John for sharing his story with us, and on another podcast in the future, I'll have him on as a guest again. So thank you for listening to the Strang Report today on the Charisma Podcast Network. And don't forget to go to my own website, GodTrump2020.com, to find out about my new book, which is why I was in Springfield on kind of a tour publicizing it. And of course, I've had a lot of other podcasts that you can listen to on the Charisma Podcast Network. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.